Hi all, and welcome to Cosmic Voice once again on this Thursday evening with Drake, and we have a special guest this evening, someone from the Citizens Grand Jury, a guy called John Darash. Hopefully I've pronounced that correctly.
John's here to help us understand how you put together a Citizens Grand Jury, and I appreciate his patience in this. The thing that just happened was that John dropped off. I think our fan club's busy, so I'm going to keep talking just for a minute. The person that is implementing this, he tells me that there are a load of states. Yeah?
He's back on.
Okay. He tells me there's a load of states that are involved. If he can give a short synopsis as to, I hear a bunch of states, we need grand juries everywhere. And the question I can give was simple. Do you really want to do this? You want to take back control, get you, and garner your freedom on a legal basis for starters? If so, the grand jury is the way to go. John, are you there?
Yeah, hey. Hello. How are you? Good evening.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Well, I'm fine.
Sounds like somebody's playing games with their connections again.
Yeah, I got thrown off, but I just got back on. Gerard is with me also. He's an associate of mine working with me to build this process. There's quite a few of us involved, but Gerard's been working with me for quite some time.
Great.
Yeah, let me start off with a couple of things. I'd like to look at a Supreme Court ruling which really tells us where we're at today. And about power, and then I'll talk about how many states and where we're at here in New York and across the nation. In a ruling of Downs versus Bidwell, 1901 ruling, it was said, it will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of a government outside supreme law finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violations of the principles of the Constitution. Today, indeed, is an evil day in American liberty, and we indeed are about to lose our nation. All the states are just about ready to collapse ultimately. They've totally destroyed our structure and our Constitution, our heritage, our economy, and we really don't have much time left. I mean, I don't know how long. I don't know that anybody knows how long or could put a date to it, but surely it's quite close. One of the things we've been talking about recently on our program is the fact that there are over 383,000 foreign troops on American soil as of October 2nd. I've been told by some people who claim to have an inside intel on this and said it's far more than that. But 383,000 is quite alarming to me. That's enough to make me be concerned. Our founding fathers didn't want a standing army of Americans on our soil, period. And we have 383,000 foreign troops. So obviously we need to do something. Tea parties and different liberty groups have been working over the years, and there's been some people who have been working for decades with this problem, trying to set the alarm and try to figure out how can we solve this problem. And I can tell you that all of the different processes and different things have been tried, to trying to take political power, trying to take power economically in many different ways and in American institutions. There's just not enough time, and it fails because they're really able to overtake us in those areas. But there is only one way that this country could be saved, and it's up to the people. If the people do not want to save this country, then it's going to go down the drain. If the people want to save this country, they need to stand up, and it's time to stand up now. And we discovered this back in June of this year. Well, actually, it was around May we started to research in on this, but we started really getting active in this in June of 2013. Elected our first grand jury on July 18th, 2013, and that was in Dutchess County, and here in New York. Since then, we have elected 19 grand juries in New York, and we have about a dozen more that's about to be elected over the course of the next 2 weeks. We're planning on that now, maybe a dozen and a half. Obviously, our goal is to get 62 grand juries in New York, because New York has 62 counties. we went national not long after we started having meetings on the Internet, and people from other states were coming in, and they were interested in what we were doing, and we told them, well, you could do exactly what we're doing because common law is common law, and this is the process that we were operating under. So one by one, states started to come into our room, and the word started to get out, and then we decided, well, we're going to create a national page, and we changed our name from New York Committeeman to National LibertyAlliance.org. And today, only a few months later, we have 48 states on board, full bore, creating common law grand juries throughout the nation. The only two states we lack, and we do know we're getting hits from people, and we do know we have a few people that are signed up from those states, but nobody has taken on the leadership role, and that's North Dakota and Vermont. And we intend on getting them as soon as possible. We ask people all the time, call people in Vermont, call people in North Dakota, find somebody to get them out to our website, watch the video on the front page, understand what this process is all about, and get on board. We discovered that pretty much anybody who watches the video on the front page that's been concerned and looking for the solution and the answer, they will find it. If you've been looking for the solution to the problem, you can find that answer on our front page by watching a video called Power of the Grand Jury. It's about 40 minutes long, and our website again is nationallibertyalliance.org. You know, they have robbed us of our freedom. They've robbed us of our spiritual power. They've robbed us of our political power, and they've robbed us of our judicial power. Those are the three powers. Those are the three things that makes a man worth anything. His relationship with God, which is, of course, up to you. You have to work that out in your prayer closet. But we're taught all the time, go find a priest or a pastor or something like that. No, you have to find God. You have to work that out and bend your knee. We're talking about natural law here, which is also called common law. We call the juries that we're constructing common law grand juries because we're bringing it back to natural law. Natural law brings us back to our heritage, and our heritage is the liberty that has been given to us directly from God. Man didn't give us our rights. God gave us our rights. And so that's natural law. And if we're going to be prosperous in natural law, then obviously we're going to have to bend our knee to the Maker and work out our problems with Him. And then maybe He might bless us and give us that liberty that He is pleased to give those who are obedient to Him. But, you know, there are two powers particularly that we've been struggling for. I know I've been struggling for quite some time, particularly one of them. Everybody thinks the power is in the political power. And it is true. It is the political power that drives this country. But the political power, you'll never get a hold of. You'll never get a hold of the controls. Both the Republican and the Democrat parties, which is the largest parties, obviously, and control the entire political process, both of them have been taken over by the progressives quite some time ago. And so both of them are destructive. Both of them are set up as a communist structure. It's a top-down structure. You get out of line, they just kick you out, and there's nothing you could do about it. We have been fighting in the courts for about 3 years now concerning the political powers because they've expunged the elected committeemen. Now, that's kind of another story that I'm not going to get into, but there is a way to get political power if you can become an elected committeeman. Today, committeemen are called town committeemen, and ultimately they're appointed. They just appear to be elected. They're not. It's a facade. And so they've expunged that, and we've taken them to task in the courts. We've went all the way up to the appellate courts, and we didn't get any satisfaction. They didn't care that the Board of Election was breaking the law because they were politically expedient themselves. They were for the status quo. Anyway, we continued to make our fight in the court, and we continued to get a lot of experience in the courts. And then we discovered the case of United States versus Williams. And we pretty much, when we come to realize what that case was saying, we pretty much dropped everything and started to go full bore towards this common law grand jury. What makes the common law grand jury so powerful, it's really spoken of in our founding document. It's by the consent of the people. We have government by the consent of the people. We read about that in the Declaration of Independence. Well, the question is how does the people consent to the government? And the answer is the jury system. And it's not just the grand jury, it's also the trial jury. We're teaching people how to create the grand juries, to bring them back into their counties. Well, let me just give you a little picture of how the structure works in all the states. They may call them different. For instance, in New York State, we call the court systems the Supreme Court, the trial courts, which is the Supreme Court, New York Supreme Court, and whatever county you're in, Dutchess County, Rockland County, or whatever. In Pennsylvania, they call them the courts of common, but that is the common law grant. That is the common law court. Now, we'll just talk a little bit about New York. It works the same in all the states. They just may call it different names, that's all. But in New York, there's one Supreme Court, only one. But they have a location in each of the counties. So there are 62 locations to the Supreme Court, the trial court, which would be for the criminal court, and the civil court. And so each one of those counties elect a judge, and they're supposed to be running common law courts according to the Constitution. Both the United States Constitution, in the case of New York, the New York Constitution also requires that these be courts of law or common law courts or courts of record. It all means the same. But something has gone desperately wrong, obviously, and we have courts of equity. We do not have common law courts. And so the only way that this problem could be solved is if the people rise up and bring back the common law grand jury. Now, a common law grand jury in New York, for instance, again, we're going to establish them in 62 locations because there are 62 courts, but we too are unified just like the Supreme Court. We are one grand jury, not in 62. We just have 62 locations. We can indict anywhere in the state. We can participate anywhere in the state. If I had a certain experience in a certain situation and the grand jury up in, for instance, over in Erie County or any county in New York, Monroe County, if they called me up and asked if I can come and sit on that that particular committee for whatever purpose, whether it is a grand jury or even a trial jury, and I went out there, I'd be able to sit on that committee. So you can act any place you want, but the key thing is being able to control each of the courts, and that's why we create 62 grand juries. These judges must return to common law because that's what the law says. And the power of the grand jury is that we would be able to get the judges here once we get access into the court itself and get a seat in the grand jury room. We would have access to the judge, and we would tell him that he's got a problem, and what he's doing is a wrongdoing. Now, remember, I don't know if I mentioned this, but the duty of a grand jury is to fix and repair and stop or prevent all wrongdoing. And so we would let the judge know that there is a wrongdoing in his courtroom because he is running a court of equity when it should be a common law court. And he needs to bone up on common law, and he needs to make the necessary changes. In a common law court, the judge does not get to judge. The judge in a common law court is called a justice, and he's supposed to reflect, ultimately, the will of the king. He's supposed to be a just individual, and he's only like a traffic cop. That's it. The tribunal makes the decision in the courts, and that tribunal is either one of two. It is either the trial jury, or it is the sovereign of the court. So if you were a sovereign of the court, for instance, and you were the plaintiff and you sued somebody, and the other side was brain dead and didn't know enough to ask for a jury to make the decision, at the end, the sovereign of the court, who is the plaintiff, gets to make the decision. Also, the other side, of course, could do a countersuit, and then they'd become the plaintiff also, and then that would execute immediately a jury into the system, and they would be the tribunal. But the judge doesn't get that choice. The judge doesn't get the opportunity to tell the jury what they can do and what they can't do, or how to interpret the law. Especially in New York, we do have in our Constitution, we have a subsection 9. Which says that the grand jury gets to decide both law and facts. And if the judge tries to put his will onto the jury, then that would be jury tampering, and we'd have a duty to do something about that. So it's always the threat of ultimately doing a presentment, which is the same thing as doing an indictment, except that the grand jury does it on its own accord. So it puts forth a presentment and writes up a true bill of indictment, files it with the court clerk, and then it goes through a process that can't be stopped. Anybody that interferes with the movement of that process, they too, that's a crime, and they would be facing indictment also. And by the way, that's where we're at right now. We have an indictment in on people who are trying to stop us from going in. But in any event, it is the fear of that indictment that will bring the judge under control. He's got three choices. He can either obey, and we're going in there with a sense of mercy. We're going in there. We're not going in with a witch hunt because we don't have time for the witch hunt. Our country is about ready to fall. We need to fix our country, and we need to do it quickly. So we need to save the republic. That's the first order of business. And the judge, whatever he's done in the past, whatever sins he's got in his closet, we don't care. All we want from this point forward is for him to obey the law. And as long as he does that, we're good. We need to do the same thing with the prosecutor and the same thing with the sheriff. Now, of course, later on down the road, once we've taken care of the major problems we're facing here in America, people then will have the opportunity to come make their complaints to the grand jury. And if they make a complaint about this particular judge and on how he destroyed their lives or whatever the case may be, well, now we have a duty to do something about it. So justice will find itself in the end. We just don't need to be on a witch hunt. We need to save America. But the key focus, again, is bringing them down under control by the fear of the people. And they indeed are fearful of this. There are some, you'll hear some radio programs and different things as this becomes out more and more into the news, and you'll get all the lawyers and the politicians, and they'll be saying how terrible this is. Let me tell you, they're frightened to death because they all have skeletons in the closet, and they know that the party has come to an end once the people take control. So again, it's going to be up to the people to step up and do this. But we need to move quickly. There's 3,141 counties here in the entire United States, at least the last count, that's what it was. And we need to get common law grand juries in every single one of them. But anyway, once you bring the judge under control, the next order of business is to deal with the prosecutor. Now, the prosecutor is a pretty simple guy to deal with because it's a very simple conversation with him, and we don't have to, wine and dine him like we might want to do a little bit with the judge. We just put it to him straight, and the bottom line is this. You can't be using those puppet juries. You know, these prosecutors, they have no problem saying things like, well, we can indict a ham sandwich. And they have no problem trying to make deals with people. They don't have this authority. It's not them. They are not indicting anyone. They're coming to get the consent of the people when they call a grand jury. You see, they still kind of understand that they can't really indict someone without a grand jury, although some states have been doing this, and it's getting worse, and we better move quickly on this. But the bottom line is they do come to the people to get their consent for an indictment, and either the grand jury indicts or ignores, or one or the other. And, of course, the grand jury can go off on its own and do its own investigation anywhere it pleases and then write a prescription to repair it. And if it doesn't get repaired, they'll be under the threat of indictment. And the exploratory committee that went out and did that investigation, if they didn't fix it, they would bring it to the 25, and they would consider the indictment. And then if they couldn't repair the problem, then they would send it in for the trial, and these people would be pulled out of office. And so that's the power of the grand jury. But let's get back to the prosecutor. He can no longer call for a puppet grand jury. He can no longer call the judge can't call for a puppet jury at all, a trial jury. He needs to come to the people, and the people will administrate this part of the process, and they will orientate all of the jurors to come into the system, and they will supply the necessary people to hear the trial, or if it's considering an indictment, to hear the indictment. And we'll let them know real quick there are certain things that he shouldn't bother bringing to us. Like, for instance, when they think that people are When they're violating people's Second Amendment right, for instance, people don't need permission or a permit or a license to have a weapon. That's their prerogative if they want to do that. And if anybody arrests anyone for that purpose, that would be kidnapping. And the grand jury has the power and the authority to let these police officers know, to let the sheriff know, and it's the sheriff's job to get off to the other police departments. Let them know, don't be arresting people for exercising their Second Amendment right or any of their unalienable rights. Any statute out there, according to common law, any statute that tries to control the behavior of one of the people is null and void. And you will find that ultimately in a 1902 case called Marbury versus Madison, which says exactly that, that it would be null and void. Anything repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. Now, the third order of business, bringing law and order back into our states and therefore through the whole nation, is to deal with the sheriff. And the sheriff will usually be on board. He doesn't know anything about the law anyway, usually. And he's going to do whatever the attorneys tell him, but now he's going to do whatever the grand jury tells him. So we need to really take him under our wing and educate him. We've created a book so he can become educated, and the bailiffs and even the judges and the prosecutors and everybody, and the jurors, of course, through this book, they can become educated and understand what the common law is. But we also need, at least here in New York, our militia is completely gone, and they've closed down all of our armories. We don't have any armories no more. And we the people need that back, and we can push upon our legislature, because it's a requirement under the Constitution, to reopen the funding for these purposes, and we would let, considering today's problems and situations, it's very tense. It seems to be wise to let the sheriff handle the control of this armory and the militia, at least until things stabilize. Then it should go back into the hands of the people. This way, if there was an emergency of some kind, they couldn't put martial law in that county, and hopefully all 62 counties, so all of New York State, these sheriffs should be working together. They couldn't put martial law. The sheriffs will take care of any emergency. We'll handle it. And whatever, you know, resources that come out of a particular county, the sheriff will make sure that surplus goes, first of all, that it takes care of the county that it's in, and then the surplus would go to the sister counties and so on, and then eventually out to other states. But first order of business is the county in which the resources are within, and working together to make sure that all the other counties of New York are able to survive and be provided for by whatever resources are necessary to sustain life. And so once we achieve that level, we're secure, and we've brought our courts into courts of justice again, at that point we have just brought the republic back. We have just reset the political and the judicial clock back to 1789. And any political individual, anybody elected that breaks the Constitution, they would be warned, they'd be given a written prescription, and they'd either obey, or we would indict them and remove them from office. The power is unbelievable. And, of course, we don't want to be pulling people out of office. And I'm sure once we do one or two indictments, everybody's going to just behave and do their job and obey the law, because that's all we're asking them to do. So pretty much that's kind of a picture in a nutshell on what exactly we're doing and where we're at. We're hoping that before the end of this year that we have, if not all, close to all, 3,141 grand juries. But only if the people want freedom. Only if the people want liberty. And if they want liberty, they got to step up. They got to take back their heritage. And their heritage is natural law. It's a very important thing to realize what your heritage is. People don't understand what their heritage is. If your heritage is common law, which is natural law, that's what gives you your unalienable rights. Obviously, they should be have a good understanding of their unalienable rights, a good understanding of natural law and how it works. And that's what we're here to do, is to bring that back to the people. So it's now up to the people. It's going through the country, or the nation, shall I say, like wildfire. And hopefully all enough of the people will step up and do what has to be done, do their duty, and save this nation and bring us back to the republic that we were meant to be. And if they're not interested, then we're going to lose America. Anything particularly you'd like to ask?
Are you encouraged at how rapid it has progressed?
Oh, it's moving extremely quick. I think New York, look, you know, I'm idealistic and I kind of very hopeful and like to see things move faster. But I'll tell you what, it's moving as fast as I've ever dreamed. Just think about what we said earlier. Our first grand jury was elected in July 18th this year. That's August, September, October. We're 3 months in, and since that first election took place, we have established this movement in 48 states. And New York, we have every county south of Albany elected, with the exception of Richmond. We should be getting that in the next week or two. I'm trying to get that moving. But anyway, we have four of the five boroughs of New York City have elected a common law grand jury. The two counties out on Long Island have elected common law grand juries. All of the counties above them, all the way up to Albany, has elected common law grand juries. We have a half a dozen we're working on in the northern part of the state, about a half a dozen, actually more than a half a dozen, maybe 10 of them we're working on in the central part of the state, and another half a dozen or so in the western part of the state. And we have Monroe County, which is all the way on the western part of the state, already elected. And we have up in the southern, in the northern part of the state, Schenectady County has already elected a common law grand jury. So all of these counties are moving very quickly towards the mark of electing grand juries. And so most of the populated areas will be elected probably in the next three or so weeks. And then all those other counties will be working on the more sparsely populated counties and try to get them into the game as quick as possible. So New York will be in line well before the year ends, and we'll be ready to do what we have to do. Now, I teach on our website, and sometimes people misquote what we're saying. We can literally change New York, the face of New York, in less than 90 days. But that's less than 90 days after we have majority of the counties elected. And elected meaning really electing the process back in. Now, the people that are involved with the grand jury, they're administrators. There are four of them. We teach that people need to find four people who are willing to take on the full-time effort of being administrators. And those administrators would administer to the juries. Whenever a jury is needed, they would be called upon, and they would then call in the people. We're taking a registry, so that would be our first place that we would start to get people from. It's called the registry. And then we'd pick up the voting registry, and we'd call from there. But we would bring them in, and we'd get the opportunity to orientate them. We get the opportunity to tell them what the law is and what the law isn't, and what the true law, what natural law is. We get to tell them that they get not only to decide the facts, but they also get to decide the law. We get and everybody that comes into the jury, they're required to sign an oath, and they take an oath. I'll see if I can find it in a few minutes. But they take an oath, and basically, it has three principles, and those three principles that every jurist must act upon in every decision they make, and every time they come together, they have to consider these three principles over all the time. You have to develop a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And that's how we make our decisions, always looking at honor, justice, and mercy. And no matter what decision you make, if you make it with those three things in mind, you will be able to go to sleep that night. Now, there are two maxims that we teach that have to be really served when you're looking to see whether you need to indict or what needs to be done at the end of a case. If you did this indict, what the jury has to do. And that is, the two maxims is in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. If there is no injured party, there is no crime, and the state cannot be an injured party. The second maxim in common law is that for every injury, there must be a remedy. So the first order of business that the grand jury has to ask itself as soon as it takes on a case is there any way that we can remedy this case without having to send it into the trial courts? And what would it take to restore the individual that has been injured? And so the opportunity, before we even go into court, is there that we can arbitrate this case. Now, there are some people that are complaining about that, of course, lawyers. And this is what they do anyway. And they make these deals. They're dirty deals, the ones they make. They always make a deal. Yeah, we're going to give you this. You know, you do that. And it does, they don't care if the person's guilty or innocent. You know, but once the grand jury is convinced that this person is probably guilty, we would give that person the opportunity to make recompense to this injured party. So we have the opportunity to discuss with the injured party to see what their injury is and try to work out an agreement on what would be sufficient to restore that person to their former being. And if we can come up with a solution and they're interested in this, then we would take that over to the defendant and we'd offer him the deal. And, you know, a common law grand jury is not about putting people in jail. That's what the government's about. No, common law grand jury is about restoring the injured party at all costs, no matter what. That's enough of a payment and a suffering for the individual that has wronged someone else, is to make that wrong right. The Bible sets down a lot of principles for this. Sometimes it's threefold, sometimes it's sevenfold. So if you stole $1,000 from an individual, well, the right thing to do, he's got to be paid seven times that number. So you got to pay him back $7,000. So if they're now if they're guilty, they're going to probably take the deal. But if they don't want to take the deal and they want to go to trial, then fine, and we'll send them to the trial jury and they'll hear all the facts and they'll make a decision for this person and what's going to happen. But they're always going to have in their mind is how are we going to restore the injured party. Right now you go to court, let's say you got mugged and you went into court. They caught the guy and they call you in and they call you in as a witness. But that's about all you get. You get to be a witness in your case and then they throw you back out in the streets and they couldn't care less about you. And if they can get a fine off this guy, they make money by putting him in prison, so they put him in prison, and they get all these funds from prosecuting this individual, but the injured party sees nothing. They have to actually go through a civil lawsuit, they got to hire a lawyer, spend money, and they don't even know if they're going to win, especially in today's environment in courts. You can't get justice in today's courts. So we will eliminate all that because common law is not about that. The court gets nothing. You know, you go to court, you pay for everything. You want to file a complaint or whatever, you have to pay in New York, you got to pay $210 to file to get an index number. Then you got to pay $95 to get what's called an RJI. Then you got to pay $45 for every motion you move. No, this is our court. It's free. They're already being paid. That building's being paid for. We built that building. People don't pay to use their facilities. That's my facility. That's my court. That's my house of justice, and it needs to be a house of justice. And this is what the common law grand jury can do. I want to tell you something. You know, this country was robbed, as everyone knows, back in 1913 and right up through 16. And they created the Federal Reserve, which we know is not federal, nor does it have a reserve in it. And Rothschild, who started this whole process, I think it was back in the 17th century, the father and his sons, he made a statement some years ago, and he said, you know, give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes the law, because he'll have control of the nation. Well, that's a true statement, but he left out one thing. In order for him to control the nation with the money, he needs to control the judicial system. And if he doesn't control the judicial system, he can't control anything because the judicial system will put his rear end in jail and take care of all of those acts of against the people, violating against the people, fraud, acts of fraud. So the grand jury is extremely powerful. It has a duty to repair and fix all wrongdoings, whether it be in the judicial or the political realms. It also has a duty, and they should. The grand jury is supposed to be reachable by the people. When we're going to set up a registry on our website, and that registry will have a phone number for every grand jury in every county at some point in time. And anybody that needs to talk to their grand jury, you try to go talk to a grand jury right now. You're not going to get to see them. You're just not going to see them because the prosecutor is not going to let you see them. The judge is not going to let you see them, and you have no idea where to find them because they're hidden behind these people. But when the people control this, they will be out in the open. There'll be a phone number. You'll be able to get on the phone. You go up and you look up your state, you look up your county, you get the phone number, you make the call, and you say, I got a problem. Well, yeah, what is it? And you could talk to someone on the other end of a phone, And you might even be able to solve it right there on the phone. Maybe they got a problem with some bureaucrat in some particular government office. So we make the phone call. We make a three-party call. Make that phone call, get that person on the line and say, hey, we got Mr. Jones here. He's telling us about this problem with you, Mrs. Smith. What do you have to say about all this? And we could put the pressure on these people and let them know in no uncertain terms, either you obey the law and respect the people that you work for, or you leave your job. And the grand jury will have the power to remove these people from their job. You know, we can go into with a prescription and put it straight out. This guy, this woman, this person, and that person's got to leave because this is what's going on, and this is a serious problem, and you guys should have known about it, and we're going to fix it right now. We're going to give you the prescription. We're going to tell you how to do it, but they're all fired. And if you don't want to sign up to that prescription, that's fine. You're all going under indictment. And we'll just bring you back to the 25. We'll explain to the 25 what you've done, and I'm sure they're going to indict. And if they indict, then you'll all go to have to pay the toll for whatever it is. This is huge. This has been hidden from us for a long time. This was revealed, and we have this on our website. We have it on our front page, and we have it in various other places on our website. The court case called United States versus Williams. And everyone should go up there and read this court case. And we have highlighted all of the really, you know, meaty stuff in this case, so it's easy to find the meaty stuff, but you should read the whole case anyway. And in this case, what was laid out by Scalia in a 6-3 decision back in 92 is just mind-boggling. It just blows you away. I mean, whoever knew that the grand jury had such power and such authority?
You, all the people out there have been listening. I would suggest you sit up and take notice. I've tried through various means for people to have the opportunity to be able to, when they get off the couch, actually accomplish something. This is one of the means by which that can happen, where we can regarner the things that have been taken. This is what this is about, freedom, and this is what I'm looking towards. I'm not looking towards, I'm the big poobah or any of that. I don't really care about that at all. My importance relies on the people being able to get information that's correct and apply it. This is an application of your God-given and judicially given or sanctioned or enforced rights. This is the manner in which you can retake control, and that's what this is about. Thomas, you got some music?
We sure do. Right. That was a very interesting highlight. Thanks for that, John. And we'll be back with Drake and John after this musical interlude.
Everybody's waiting to see the government fail, and they want to try to stick their plan in place. The show tonight offers an alternative to somebody else taking the reins and being in charge again, probably causing some of the same exact problems, and or doing the same things we got now.
John, do you want to say anything further?
Yeah, I would like to make a couple of statements, really look at some of our founding fathers' thoughts. And, Thomas Jefferson said, I would rather be exposed to the inconvenience attending to too much liberty than those attending too small a degree of it. Freedom requires maturity, and people need to take control of themselves, because freedom, the way our founding fathers set up, is not a system that we have today where our behavior is legislated by people who actually work for us. You know, we the people ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. People have got to come to understand that they are above the Constitution and that the legislators and all of our government is under the Constitution. The Constitution puts them into a box. The Constitution, the framework of the Constitution, tells the government what they can do. And, of course, the Bill of Rights tells the government what they can't do. You know, we have coming together creating a unified common law grand jury throughout the state, and eventually nationally would be a great idea also, and we're working on that too, obviously. But our mission statement is to restore the people to sovereignty through knowledge, and only then will they be armed with the virtue to take political and judicial power. The people have it in their power to disarm and defeat the enemy of liberty, both foreign and domestic, if they only understood the principles of freedom and stood up for them. I'd like to make a couple of points and then just read this Juris Notes, and then maybe, you know, I'll take some questions or something. Our founding fathers were quite clear that we will either serve God or tyrants. They studied the great minds of the 17th century and before. They looked back in history. They looked at the Magna Carta. They looked into the Bible. They looked at Mosaic law. And of course, they came up with the government that we have today. And they came to a conclusion. Men serve God or tyrants. Either we come with a bent knee to our Maker, our Creator, and receive the heritage that He desires to give us through obedience, through a bent knee, and that heritage is our unalienable rights. But you cannot have those unalienable rights if you do not bend your knee to your Maker. And people have to work that out personally. They have to go into their prayer closets and talk to their God and figure it out. Nobody else can help them with it. I mean, you know, we can get a little preaching here and there. That's fine. But we have to do it ourselves. We have to answer to God. Daniel Webster said, "Hold on, my friends, to the Constitution and the Republic for which it stands. Miracles do not cluster. And what has happened once in 6,000 years may not happen again. Hold on to the Constitution. For if the American Constitution should fail, there will be anarchy throughout the world." So I'd like to just real quickly read the Juris Oath that we put together. And we really toiled over this. We changed it numerous times till we got it to a point and a place where we think it really will help to guide the individual who becomes a jurist, whether it be trial or grand. And here it is. "I vow to the governor of the universe, in my capacity as jurist, to ensure that all public servants uphold the United States Constitution and the Bill of Prohibitions, which is the Bill of Rights, and to carry out all my deliberations under natural law, principled under justice, honor, and mercy, and to strictly adhere to the following two legal maxims. Number one, every right, when withheld, must have a remedy, and every injury its proper redress. And two, in the absence of a victim, there can be no crime, corpus delicti. The state cannot be the victim. It is the duty of all the people to share in the governing of themselves and to secure their government by participating as a jurist." And so that is the oath that we require everyone to take. It is really, again, vowing to the Creator of the universe that you're going to obey these rules. And these are principles of common law. And, you know, some people, the naysayers, will say, well, a bunch of drug addicts may get into art, or some people who believe this, or, you know, we're not political. We have nothing to do. We're interested in justice. We don't care about politics. It's irrelevant to us. We're interested in justice. And if they come in and take these oaths or refuse to take these oaths and start to act outside of natural law, well, obviously they're doing a wrongdoing. And if they're doing wrongdoing, the true grand jury has to do something about it and correct that wrongdoing. If you get an individual that comes in that creates havoc amongst the 25, the 24 have the ability and the duty to correct that one. And to reset them back into the system. Say, hey, look, come on, you know, behave yourself. This is the vow you took. This is how you got to respond. And if they don't behave and do the right thing, the 24 have the to just vote them out of the box and bring a new person in to sit on that particular grand jury. And again, we're not having people to get into a grand jury that's going to be there forever and become control freaks. No. We're going to, you know, rotate people within our county. As many people as will step up and do their duty. And we will re-educate our people within our communities, within our towns, within our counties. And we'll go and get back into the schools to teach our children what is their duty to give back to society and to stand for righteousness and be morally minded. You know, when we go out and do any kind of a presentation, we usually hand out a eighth grade test, and it comes from 1895. And that eighth grade test is superior to any college level you can find here in the United States, because our whole system is set up to program people, not to educate people, to control people, not to free people. And so, again, it gets back, either we're going to serve God, or we're going to be right back to where we started from, and we're going to be serving tyrants. So this is what the people must do.
Cool. Thanks for that, John. Yes.
We got a good load of questions, Tom.
Sure.
Yes. John, you mentioned earlier about the administrators.
Correct.
Are these people paid officials, or is it a free enterprise?
No, well, the administrators of the process obviously would have to be paid because it's a full-time job. And so the most qualified people should emerge out of the counties, at least four individuals, maybe places with high population. You might need five, six, seven, eight. I don't know. They'll have to figure that out. But as a general rule, we're teaching four people. And those four individuals would be, you know, taking phone calls, talking to people, maintaining the administrative process. When a grand jury is called, one of those four people would be called, and we would then muster up a jury, a grand jury. Those four will probably sit on the grand jury with them, or maybe at least one of them. If those four people see an individual within the rankings that is capable of taking on as the jury foreman, then they should give it to that individual. If not, then one of those four might hold the gavel, so to speak. But we have to, it's the people's grand jury. We have to get the people involved, and we have to train the people and teach the people and let them know what their heritage is. So those four individuals are full-time. It is a paid position. That salary would be decided upon in something equal to its type of work in a professional level, according to the geographical area they live in, because the economy is different in different places, which really shouldn't be. You know, we should be really robust in our economy throughout all of the nation and all of the states. But of course, they've destroyed us. It's a paid position. And again, you know, when if one of the four people or anybody can come to the grand jury and say, I think there's some problems over here, can we go investigate? Sure, let's go do it. They can come with us. We'll take a fifth and a sixth wheel. We don't care. And we'll just show up at the doors of some agency or like the Board of Elections or something and say, hey, look, you know, we're from the grand jury. We'll give them a card. We got some questions you're asking because we're the boss. And they work for us. And the boss has the right to walk behind their counter, look into their computers, look into their desks, question the people, find out what's going on, and discover if there are any problems. And you don't need, you know, in Scalia's, the case when Scalia wrote this decision for the majority in U.S. versus Williams, he made it quite clear that we don't need a reason to investigate. We can go investigate just to make sure there's nothing going wrong. Now, how much more would we investigate if we get a couple of complaints? Or how much more if we personally know that the laws are being broken over here? The fact of the matter is the laws are being broken everywhere in government. And as soon as the people, mommy and daddy, come home, the party is over. And it's time to clean up the house. And I'm telling you, it's only going to take one or two indictments. People are going to realize and say, hey, you know, people will probably be bailing ship by the droves. I think a lot of judges are going to resign and probably try to move out of town, disappear in the woodwork or something, because they're guilty of sin. I've been in the courts, like I said, about 4 years now. I'm appalled. I never would have dreamed that here in America we would have the situation we have. It is seriously defunct. So anyway, short answer, yes.
We used to have people who used to do investigating. They were called journalists.
Yeah.
Sadly, than the government's puppets now.
Yep.
All right. Will current bar lawyers be representatives on the grand jury?
That's an interesting question. We thought about barring lawyers because anybody who works for the Bar Association has an allegiance first to a foreign entity, which is the bar. And secondly, they then owe their allegiance to the judge. And the last person they owe the allegiance to is the person paying their salary, which is you. But the bottom line is we really thought about this. And, you know, the lawyers will start leaving the bar themselves because once we turn to common law, the BAR is a communist organization. Its whole purpose is to create dominions for the New World Order in order to construct a statutory prison. We're all in statutory prison. People don't realize it until they go to court and they find out how bad it really is, and they can't get justice there, and they find out that they may end up in jail or fined very heavily or anything, you know, a lot of things. And so, once the Zo lawyers realize that everything they've been taught in law school was bullshit, I'm sorry to use that word, but that's what it is. once they find that out and they realize it, and they're going to have to now bone up on common law. And common law is logical. Common law is common sense. And, you know, there are principles and there are some, and, you know, and the whole process really works off of what's called, goodness, the name slipped. Help me, Gerard. What is it called? Oh, maxims. Called maxims. And a maxim is simply a truth that cannot be denied. For instance, if I say water cannot run uphill, you can't argue that point. That's a maxim. If I say a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing, and I've used that in court already, that's a maxim. Okay, you can't argue that point. It's true. A thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. Either it's the same thing or it's not. And that's how you really look at cases and situations, through principles and maxims. And so lawyers will eventually leave because they'll discover that they've been duped and they've been programmed and they can't make money anymore being a lawyer, because no one's going to hire a lawyer. Well, so let me call them attorneys. No one's going to hire an attorney. Now, there are common law lawyers. A lawyer is really someone who really is interested in the law. Attorneys are interested in statutes, and statutes are repugnant if they're controlling the behavior of people. So I think it'll just disappear. Obviously, no judge can sit on any panel as a justice and belong to the Bar Association, so they would have to leave it immediately. That's a no-brainer. But as far as people that are working, you know, still have a bar license, where they can't practice no more because it's all common law, maybe they can move to Jersey until Jersey catches up, or Connecticut or Pennsylvania, and all those states are catching up anyway. So, you know, they're going to have no place to go, so they're either going to have to get a new way of living, or they're going to have to bone up on common law and join the rest of the world.
So it'll take care of itself.
The answer is it'll take care of itself.
But it's sort of, they drop their license.
They don't have a license.
Eligible. Yeah.
Right, they don't have a license. They have a membership card that they think is a license. Only the state can license someone, and you can't license a right to begin with, and that's why the state never licensed an individual. I've made my arguments before judges that there's no such thing as a license. They look at me like I got six heads, but I write a damn good paper, and they don't know what to do with it.
Can you? I think there's only about four rules to common law. Can you elaborate on them, please?
Well, yeah, there are three principles and two fundamental. We'll call them rules, I guess, that we hold, or maxims. The three principles is really very simple, and again, it's a mindset. Look, we're here for justice. We have to do the honorable thing. And we always have to consider mercy. You know, we might find someone, this is the difference between the system that they have. Someone could go to jail for 20 years and the jury's, you know, blown away by it. How did they get a sentence of 20 years, you know? But the jury has the ability to look at a case and say, darn it, this guy's guilty of sin, but you know what? If I was in his situation, I would have done the same thing. So they can look at the extenuating circumstances and even forgive the whole thing. Or make a very light sentence. And again, common law is not interested in putting people in jail. That's not the solution. What common law is all about is restoring the injured party. And if there is no injured party, there is no crime, what are we doing in court? You know, people still have the civil side under common law, where they can, if they have contract disputes, and they can come in and they can battle that out under common law. Okay, but they have contracts that they had to abide by, which are the rules that they created in order to get into a business deal or whatever the case may be. And if someone violated that, they can get the justice for that. But again, that's about it. It doesn't get any more simple than that, because really law is really all about, again, justice, doing this in the sense of honor and with the sense of mercy, but it's all about fixing the wrong, finding it's common sense, it's common law. You know, the Bible tells us quite clearly that the laws are written in the hearts of men. And Christ summed it up in just one short paragraph where he says, you know, love your God with all your heart and with all your soul and love your neighbor. Upon this is the foundation. Upon this are all the laws. So if you don't, if you're hurting someone, if you mug someone, obviously you're not loving them. If you injure someone in some way, you're not loving them. I mean, it's just common sense. It's the law of God. Okay, go to the Ten Commandments. It's pretty clear. You know, that's really the basics. Common law, what people have got to understand, common law came to England about 300-400 A.D. The Anglo-Saxons brought it. They came in with the idea of trying to create a system where they'd be governed by men and governed by God and judged by God and not man. And they created this king situation, which they already made this mistake in the Bible with Saul, I think it was, and where they told him they wanted a king, and Saul became the king, and then it turned out that David, who represents God, became the king, and of course that's where righteousness was. But anyway, they wanted a king, they created a king, and in that king, he would hold the sovereignty of all free men. So all the free men, okay, whenever they had a situation or a problem, they would go looking for the king, and the king would travel with his court, and they'd get into the court of the king and expect to get justice and for the king to take care of the sovereign of the court. But, of course, it had to be a righteous situation. But that's how the whole set up. And so the American experiment is that we did away with that idea of the king and that God is our king and we are the king of kings and we're all kings. And my kingdom ends where your kingdom begins. And you don't violate my kingdom, I don't violate your kingdom, and you could do anything you want because it's your business. So it's that simple.
Yes.
And it's two maxims. Just one more time, those two maxims, which yes. I should add it in there again. You know, for every injury, there must be a remedy, and in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. The state cannot be the injured party.
Yes.
Ain't this neat? I hope everybody's listening. I get to say something at the top of each hour. We got some good music, though. People need to pay attention to this and see whether or not it fits. You got somebody watching or you got a camera looking at you? Think about it. Go for it, Tom.
Right. We'll be back with John and Drake for the final hour after this music break. See you soon. Hi all and welcome to the final hour with Drake and special guest John Dorash, and who's with the Citizens Grand Jury. The first song was for Drake, Buffalo Springfield, For What It's Worth. The second one was for Sunfire, The Dreaming, called Disconnected. And the third one was for Neil Keenan, one of his favourites, This Land Is Your Land. Right, I'll introduce Drake back and John.
Unmuted.
How do?
Okay. Should we go straight into questions, or you got something else to say? Either.
Don't ask him that. I think we ought to do some questions if we got some. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I'm up for it. Sure.
Right. John, do you think responsibility or personal responsibility will have to be increased to fall in line with common law?
Well, it will have to happen, or we will destroy ourselves. I think we've learned our lessons. I think we've seen where we're at and where we're heading to, and if by God's mercy we can escape what's coming upon this world through these crazy people. If God's merciful upon us and permits us to go forward to govern ourselves again, I think we'll get it right this time. I know we've got a lot of plans to set some fail-safes into this system to prevent this system from being taken over again from the top down you know, which is the way they take everything over. They infiltrate an institution, the parasites come in and they take control, and, you know, they go along with the game, and little by little they change things until you can't even recognize that it was an American institution anymore. And that's what they do. They destroy things. And we do have some fail-safe systems. We do share some of that, and a lot of that is being unfolded as we go. There's a lot to learn, and that's what our website is all about, to teach everybody everything they need to do. We have to become re-educated. You know, Jefferson said if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So just forget about it. We got to get away from talking in, you know, in just little burps. We have to sit down and we got to read a book again. And we have to take control of our schools. And the grand jury can, you see, the grand jury can do everything, almost anything, when it comes to the governing of ourselves, because that's their job. And if our school system is a communist setup, which is exactly what it is, it's central control of our educational system, and it's just nothing but trying to train robots that'll be obedient to the New World Order, we have a duty to fix that. And what's logical? What's common sense? Well, the school belongs to be controlled by the parents, by the people within their own towns. But we need to decide what our children are going to learn. We need to decide what the curriculum is. Yeah, there's an idea. You have to have your math and your reading and your writing and your history, and you have to have your civics to learn about not only the political process but the judicial process. Each child, by the time they come out of eighth grade, yes, I said eighth grade, should be able to walk into any court of law and make a case. Because if you saw these tests that we hand out, like I mentioned earlier, of the eighth grade tests, it would blow your mind. They don't teach anything in school today. But every child should be able, when they come out of school, to defend themselves in a common law court. Every child should understand the process, the political process, and what their duties are as a person during their lifetime, to maybe put 2 years in as a committee man to give back into the community, and to respond to the grand jury when called upon, and to come sit on that grand jury or to sit on the trial jury. This is our duty. This is our heritage. This is how we take freedom. So yeah, we have to bone up, we have to mature, and we got to become more responsible, and we have to control ourselves, and we have to stop depending on mommy and daddy controlling us for us. We need to control ourselves, and people want to control ourselves. You know, like Ron Paul said, freedom is popular, and when we're talking about freedom here, and I think it's popular, people are responding in the droves. Everybody responds. We get almost 100% every time we do anything. We get the naysayers, the people who are incapable of making a decision, or the enemies from time to time. But generally speaking, when we do the presentment, presentation of the reestablishing or the reconstituting of a common law grand jury within a county, it's overwhelming. Just about every time it's unanimous. So, yeah, we have to mature up, and we can do it. We can do it. And if we can't, you know what? If we fail, then it's our fault, okay? We did it to ourselves.
Is the Citizen Grand Jury recognized as an official body?
Not yet. We're in the middle of a big battle here in New York. We're trying to get the word out to the media. Clashed with the highest judges of the administrative level of the Supreme Court here in New York State. Two of them are operating from New York City. The other two, I'm not sure. But there are four judges. And they sent out, when they discovered that grand juries were popping up all over New York State and were filing the necessary papers to make notice that they're here and that we're looking to get a seat within every courthouse, they immediately started to send out memorandums telling the clerks to not accept the paper, to reject it, to send it back, and so on. When we filed these papers, we also filed it with what's called a file on demand, and it educates the clerk that should they remove this or reject this from the paperwork, from the filing that we're doing, that gets you up to 1 to 3 years in jail. And if you stick it in the mail, it's 20 years for fraud, too. So that's 21 to 23 years in jail. And if a judge or someone of superiority forces or intimidates an individual to remove it from that file, then that judge faces 20 years in jail. and, of course, some hefty fines. We then went to very few clerks. There's only maybe, I know of one county that actually sent it back. The rest of them, it's just sitting there. They're afraid. They don't know what to do, and rightly so. We toured the state after we did this, and we found utter fear in the faces and the responses. When we went up to these people and started talking to them, they answered every single question, and that's rare for a bureaucrat. Every single question we answered, and they were answering it in fear. They didn't know how to take us. They didn't understand what we were doing, and they knew something was wrong. And some of them, I think, were actually relief and was glad to see us coming in with this process. So, you know, there's both sides is going on in these domains. When this judge sent these papers out and we became aware of it, we told them we wanted a copy. They said, well, send a request form. And so we sent a request form and stuff. Then they said, no, we can't give it. This was an in-house memorandum, and it's not appropriate for us to give this to the people. And our response and position ultimately, what are you talking about? We're the boss, you know. Anything that goes on in the office, we should know about. But anyway, when we were making our tour, one of the clerks actually slipped us a copy. So we got a copy, and we read that copy, and we responded back in writing to these four judges concerning this memorandum. And then we gave them a warning, and we gave them mercy. We told them they had so many days to do what they had to do to allow us to get access into the courts, or we would indict them. And the time period ended, and we filed an indictment last Monday. We actually was filed on a Wednesday of last week. And that indictment now is sitting in Greene County, which I know the clerk up there is frightened to death to do anything with, and nobody knows what to do with that. We're getting ready for phase two of this. But the process is now is that these judges, according to the judicial process and the procedures of law that's been this way, what I'm going to say, for 200 years in every court of the land, whether it is in the federal courts or the state courts, the process is once a true bill of indictment is filed, it can't be removed. It must go through the judicial process. And one of the first order of business is, because this was a criminal act and they were indicted, they need to be arrested to begin with. They need to be fingerprinted. They could be released on their own recognizance, but they certainly can't return back to work. They're in dishonor. Now, that hasn't happened yet. That's our next phase. But one of the things we're trying to do is to get the media notified, and we're trying to get a response from the media. We need, this court has got, this situation has to be tried in a court of public opinion. They are trying every way they can to get us into the into their courtroom so that they can rule on us. They send us papers asking us to file an index number. I think one of them said they'd even give it to us for free, you know. So they want us into their court so they can make a ruling and throw us out. Of course, we'll never comply to that because we're the people. They've sent the FBI out on us on numerous occasions, at least three occasions. Every time the FBI comes out, the first question is, are you guys sovereign? And, of course, we go right to the law and say, well, let's see what Scalia had to say about that, or some other court case, or what the rules say, you know. So we'll show them that, and they get the point. I think the FBI, they pick up pretty quick, and they walk away. And we try to intimidate them, and I think we do a good job at that, too. And we turn it around. When they come to question us, we need to question them, okay? First of all, who are you? Let's see your badge and put a recorder down. Who made the complaint? Is there a criminal act that took place? Why are you coming to question us? Who released the names of grand jurists? Because that's a crime, too, by the way. And they get a little shaken up by this, and they usually just go away. We had one guy who said, hey, if you need my help, give me a call, you know, and he's gone. So it's been good with the FBI. We've had a good response from them. But these people are abusing their power and making false reports and claiming that we're terrorists, obviously, because of the way they question us at first. And people are going to fix this in due time. It's coming.
So on the advent of common law, does that make everyone sovereign again?
Well, you are sovereign. It depends on whether you want to exercise that sovereignty. You know, ultimately, all men are created in the image of God, and the Declaration of Independence made that clear, that we're created equal, and that our rights are unalienable. So in order to really have liberty, it's a state of mind. You just declare it within your mind and your heart, and you stand up and stand up for it, and you're free. Even if they put a bullet in your head, at least you die free. So it is what it is, and when all the people realize it's that simple, just step up and take it. We have people nullification. We, the people, can just say no, okay? And it's that simple. The problem is you got to get the masses up off their couches and out into the system and get active. Anybody that's hearing this message, if you are truly concerned about what's going on in this country, if you really want a life for your children, for your posterity, if you would like to have a future again, if you would like to, if you're just coming into retirement, if you'd like to enjoy some of that retirement, it's time to get up off of your couches and get into the system and become involved, and let's take this country back. Because only the people can save America. And the Constitution cannot defend itself. So it's up to you. You want the freedom, you can take it. You don't want the freedom, enjoy Oprah or whatever's on TV these days.
And so far, yes. I think people need to be educated, and that leads on to my next question. Do you think common law should be taught in schools?
Oh, no doubt about it. You know, common law is so simple, and not only is it simple, it is exciting and interesting, because freedom, as Ron Paul said, freedom is popular. If you go to study common law, you're going to see freedom. And it's just so great when you hear the words of our founding fathers and the principles of common law and the procedures and the process and the power that an individual has when they understand the process and is able to exercise the procedures. That's huge. And once you taste that, you can't get enough of it. And so it's really a matter of people, you know, taking that. You know, look, if you have... Let's say you realize you're out of shape and you got to get back in shape, and you say, okay, I got to do some exercise, I got to eat a little better and maybe change a little diet and stuff. Yeah, it's hard in the beginning. You got to push yourself. I know whenever I get back into the exercise craze, you know, it takes about 4 or 5 days, and I got to push myself for 4 or 5 days or so, you know, a week, and then all of a sudden I become I got to get up and exercise. It becomes, even though it's boring. A matter of fact, when I do exercise, I listen to common law tapes. We have common law lectures on our website. We have a lot of stuff in audio. We have some in video. We have a lot of writing. We have all the founders' works. We have all the great works. You could be on our site literally 10 years and still not get through all our material. That's how much we have up there. We're an education site. And once you get back into education, it's the same way. You can't stop. You want more and more and more. And you're not happy until you get more and more and more. So that's the process. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it.
Is it not a lot easier to learn for the average person under common law than the legalese babble which we currently have now?
Oh, absolutely, because the legalese babble is the mind of madmen. This is the mind of God. Literally, this is the mind of God that we're looking at. And you know, how interesting is the mind of God? A lot of people don't realize, you know, you pick up your Bible and you start reading, or people are well, they've been taught not to read the Bible, actually. People should be reading their Bible, because, look, at when you start reading, you're reading the mind of God, and it's just so awesome. And you say, wow, I never knew this. I never knew these thoughts about these thoughts and these ideas. And this is where our founding fathers got natural law from. That's their main resource. As a matter of fact, in 300 or 400 AD, as I mentioned earlier, when the Anglo-Saxons came to England and they established, they brought with them this common law idea, they met the Bible and they fused together. They found for the first time, they declared, because they don't believe in written law, okay? And common law does not rely on written law. But they said that the Bible was the first common law document. And since then, of course, we do have a few common law documents. One is the Magna Carta. Another is the Declaration of Independence. Another is, of course, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And a lot of our state constitution, even though there's a lot of repugnant stuff in our state constitutions, they're null and void. It's irrelevant. When You know, Marbury versus Madison, a case that's never been overturned. In any case it was used in as the principal part of the case, it's never been overturned. It's always been upheld. And that is that anything is repugnant to the common law or to the Constitution is null and void, and you don't have to obey it. And that has stood since 1902. And it's the most quoted case in American history is Marbury versus Madison. And so there is the principle, you know, that is set forth in common law.
That's okay.
You see, the key thing is this, and what you have to, this is a very important point about politics now. You see, The right side wants to control the left side, and there's really no right and left, but that's what they call it, so we'll call it that. The Democrats want to control the Republicans. The Republicans want to control the Democrats, and they do that by trying to control the legislators, so they legislate things that piss off the other side, and when the other side gets in, they legislate things that piss off the other side, and what they're doing is they're putting themselves in prison. And once common law comes into play, all that legislation is null and void because anything that tries to control the behavior of a free man is null and void. You can't control my behavior. That's my job. It's not the government's job to control my behavior. I'm above the government. I'm the creator of the. I'm the progenitor. I'm not the progenitor. I've inherited this. We are the creators of this Constitution. We are above the Constitution. They're below it. They work for us. And that's why a judge cannot make a ruling in a common law court, because he's hired help. He's a servant. So he doesn't get that job. Only the people can make a ruling in a court. Only a king. And that's the key.
Right. What is your understanding of maritime law, and how was it applied to the U.S.?
Well, maritime law has sneaked its ugly face, obviously, in the federal courts. And when you go into a federal court, you're arguing against corporate charter. You're not arguing anything that's under the Constitution. They ignore all that. There are ways to box these people into a corner because they did take an oath. And once they took that oath, and that's why they hide those oaths. It's hard to find, or their bonds. They don't want you to see them or find them because they feel then you might be able to use it against them. But you got to put their flesh on the line. If your flesh is on the line, you got to put their flesh on the line, and you got to go after the judge. And you have to do that very subtly. And that has crept in. So they're in fiction. We're in reality. But our reality is fiction to them, and their fiction, you know, their fiction is exactly that, fiction. It's fraud. Okay, so now you get into the state courts, and, you know, this was brought to us by way of the Bar Association, which is a communist system that's set up, and they control the minds of these parasites, which are all these lawyers. They're the New World Order minions, and they're busy constructing a statutory prison for us and by writing all these statutes and different things. They moved it into the courts. They teach. They actually judges and these lawyers actually believe that statutes are law, but statutes are not law. They're just rules and ideas. And ultimately, the purpose of statutes is to control the bureaucrat, the elected individual, the appointed person, to control government, and also to control, to some degree, commercial activity between the states. And to make regular between the states is exactly that, to make it regular, not to slow it down or speed it up according to whatever they think it is. No, just to open the floodgates and allow commerce to move between the states. And that is ultimately what commercial law is supposed to be all about. Now, there is a commercial law, which is UCC, Universal Commercial Code, and that, of course, is used for international law at sea. And what they have done is they've taken that process and they've applied the people under that law, which is maritime law. And when people come into the court, the first question, you know, let's say you were arrested for something, and the first question the judge asks you after he reads the charge is, do you understand? And in legal term, what that means is, do you stand under our authority? That's what that means. So you can never say you understand. You can say, I comprehend the words you're speaking, but I'm in total disagreement and I don't give you consent. You have no consent over me. You don't have jurisdiction over me. And you have only one choice, and that is to dismiss this case against me and let me walk out that door. And that's how your argument has got to go, and you got to stick to it. But what they try to do is they bring you in for arraignment, and the purpose of arraignment ultimately is to get jurisdiction over you. And they ask you to plead, innocent or guilty. And then they throw a sucker punch in there, and they say, well, you could also plead if you want, no contest. But once you make a plead, that means you've given consent, and you're stuck in the system, and you can end up in jail or with a fine. When the grand jury gets in...
You enter a contract with them, don't you, by doing
that's
that?
Right. So what the grand jury is going to do is going to expose that fraud. The definition of corporatism is Nazism. Nazism and corporatism are one and the same. And we have a government which is corporatism. These people have incorporated all of our cities and towns, all the municipalities. They've incorporated our counties. They've incorporated our states. They've incorporated the United States. They placed it all in fiction, and they're all under corporate charter. And they're no longer under the Constitution. And when you go before, it's a chess game in court, I'll tell you right now, and you got to play that game very, very carefully, and you got to put that judge in a box, and you got to get him to realize subtly that he's in trouble. And you're looking to put him in jail, okay? And when he starts to understand that and starts to really read the papers, because they're so damn lazy they don't even read, when they really start to read the papers, then they go into cardiac arrest and they start to understand, wow, you know, I got a problem here. We've gotten thrown out of family court. Thrown out was a good thing, in other words. We got this guy out of family court in less than 3 weeks as soon as we started with this case. Because this judge realized very quickly we were a problem to him. And there was a pretty bright lawyer, which was a friend of his, that he tried to give it to this guy for free. And he's a really good lawyer. And we wouldn't have no part of it. And when he went back to the judge, and we know he told the judge, you better get rid of these guys because they're going to take you down. That's what their intention is. Whether they're going to do it or not is another question. And when the judge started reading these papers, he realized and he got rid of this case real quick. And this happens often in town courts. Sometimes the town courts, these judges are so stupid. I mean, look at one court we're arguing in. It took us 6 months before this judge really realized the guy's background is he didn't have a judicial background. He had 6 days of judge school, and he was a retired prison guard. Okay, that was his mentality, and he brought that into the court. And this guy was given sentences left and right. I couldn't believe he was putting the people in jail, you know, for stupid things. You know, a joint of marijuana, you know, you'd give a year in jail or some crazy stupid thing, you know. But when eventually he realized, okay, and then he got rid of the case. But it took him a while to figure it out. The Supreme Court the New York Supreme Court particularly, that's a hard cookie to crack because they are so criminal. I literally could be laying on the floor before his bench with a knife out of my chest, and he would look over his little desk there and hit his hammer and say, dismissed for no cause of action. That's how bad it is in the New York Supreme Court. It is a corrupt court, whether you're in a little county town, a little town in a county, up north in the farmlands, or whether you're down in New York City. They're all corrupt. They're all for the status quo. They're all protecting each other, and it's all about money. And they keep these cases. You go pay yourself a lawyer, and believe me, the deal's already been made in the beginning. They know they're going to make a deal, but they'll soak your money for a year, 2 years, as long as they can, usually 2 years. And then they end up making a deal usually. And if the lawyer is going the wrong way and the judge doesn't want it to go that way for whatever reason, maybe he's getting a payoff from the other side, you know, whatever it is, he can signal to that lawyer and say, hey, you know, enough already, make a deal. And he's going to sell you down the pike because that lawyer owes his allegiance first and foremost to the bar and second to that court. You're the last guy, and you're paying the bill. So anybody who hires a lawyer is really a sucker. As a matter of fact, The only requirement of having is not really a license, but it's permission to work in the courts is as an attorney. And an attorney, they represent infants or wards of the state. Okay, so if you hire an attorney, you're saying you're a ward of the state. And if you're a ward of the state, then you're not capable of speaking for yourself, and you're a moron or an imbecile. Okay, and that's what they treat you like. I've been in courts where I see the two lawyers on each side arguing a case, and the individuals whose case is being argued, they're in the back, you know, they're sitting down at the desk, and they're looking around, and I mean, they're not even paying attention, okay? That's how bad it is. And they have no idea they're being taken to the cleaners, okay? They spend thousands of dollars, thousands and thousands of dollars. It's all about money.
Yes.
All right, we'll go to the questions from the Facebook page now. John, were your elections held in the courthouse, and are the judges and clerks cooperating now?
No, not yet. We're at ground zero. Like I said, we've initiated the first common law grand juries here in New York. We've initiated 18 of them at one shot. Actually, we have 19, and more are coming. And we just filed the first, bill of true bill, which is an indictment against four judges. And we're pushing that forward now as we speak. So that's where the battle is. We don't go into the courthouse to make the election. And remember, the election is really, it's an election to reinstate the common law grand jury within a county. It's not electing people to a grand jury, anything like that, because that's political. We don't get involved in political stuff. This is just getting it out to the people, doing the honorable thing, and bringing it to the people of every county, and calling. We put it in the newspapers, and we try to get a library usually. But goodness, we've done it in the back rooms of bars. We've done it in restaurants, a lot of libraries, any place we can get a room, because sometimes the libraries won't let you in. We do it in town halls, a lot of places we get in town halls. Some places they don't let us. We just show some videos, three short videos, and then we ask the people if they want to reinstate the common law grand jury here in that county, and it's been unanimous pretty much most of the time. Occasionally you get some brain dead person, but other than that, it's usually unanimous. And then what that means is you have constituted a common law grand jury in that county by the people coming together and deciding to do so. And then we write a paper with four pages of authorities on what authority we are acting upon. It's the authority of the people, of course. But we got four pages of authorities, and we have a declaration of the constitution of a common law grand jury in that county, the date, place, and time it was taken. It's signed by three witnesses. Then we get other three witnesses to do three affidavits to swear that this election took place at a certain time. We put it in the newspaper. We put proof of that newspaper as a press release that this is going to happen. And then we file it with the county clerk as a notice to all men. And then we file it with the court clerk as a memorial to let them know we're here, and we cover with a top letter saying we're going to give you a call in a week or so. We want to make a connection with the custodian so that we can gain access into the people's room, which is the grand jury's room. And that therein is the battle we're at right now.
Yes. Next question. Lawyers I've talked to say common law is basically customs and traditions. Then they say our current custom and traditions are the statutes and codes which have now been in place for decades.
Right.
Is it going to be much of a fight to get people in general to understand that common law is natural law going back to biblical times?
Oh, yeah. Look at when people really see what common law is. Look at, well, you want to know common law? Read the founding fathers. Read their papers. Read their letters between themselves. Read the documents they created. Read the Declaration of Independence. Read the Magna Carta. That you'll see common law. Read the early court cases particularly. But, you know, the United States Supreme Court, surprisingly, up to date, has been very good holding up the real common law. And, again, this 92 case which Scalia authored, as the under the majority, is a superb paper. As a matter of fact, the case, there was no reason for him to have put all this information in this 92 case. It just wasn't necessary. And so obviously Scalia had an alternative motive. He wanted to bring all this information and understanding, and believe me, there's a mountain of stuff in this case. And he wanted to get it out there and maybe someone would pick up on it. And it took, 21 years away, and we're only now picking up on this. A few people have tried this, and there are a few common law grand juries out there that are actually working, scattered around the country. But not many, not doing what we're doing to get it through the whole nation. And so what he put in there is what a lawyer would call is dicta, okay, and not on point. So when you try to use this case and his conclusions, you know, which we had a little bit of a debate last night. I was on a radio program, and we had this lawyer, and that was his point that let's look at the case itself and the merits of the case and what it was really all about. And he was right, what it was all about. But that still doesn't change the fact that dicta still has some power, and we can still go to that authority. But the interesting thing about what he wrote, which was called dicta and not on point. He put in a huge amount of information on past U.S. Supreme Court rulings and history, and even as far as relating to some degree to the Magna Carta, and calling the Fifth Amendment the Fifth Amendment common law, the common law grand jury of the grand jury of the common law Fifth Amendment, which means a common law grand jury, you know, And so he put it in there for a purpose, and then he gave us all of the references as far as the authorities that he was ruling by, and you can go and look onto those cases, and those cases are on point. So he did us, the American people, a huge goodness here. I don't know about these individuals on a personal level. Some people think this is a good guy, this is a bad guy. Me, I personally can't tell anymore, but I'll tell you what, I judge people by their actions. And what he did was throw us a lifeline. And we grabbed onto that lifeline. And we're at the end of our rope, people. Get up and grab onto this lifeline, and let's take back America.
Yes, I agree.
Is there any work being done to co-opt the sheriffs into this system?
Oh, very simply. Yes. Yeah, once we get a seat into the courthouse, the first order of business is getting a seat in the courthouse. The moment you have that seat in the courthouse, you're recognized. It's done. The war is won, okay? So that's where we're at. We're fighting that battle. We intend on winning that war. Once we get into that courthouse, the first order of business dealing with the judge, second order of business dealing with the prosecutor, third order of business dealing with the sheriff. When we call that sheriff down and say, hey, how you doing, Mr. Sheriff? We're the common law grand jury, and we'd like to talk to you for a while. We've got a few things. We'd like to give you a gift. We've got a book we'd like to give you, which the name of our book is Common Law Handbook for Jurors, Sheriffs, Bailiffs, and Justice, and it is up on our website. And we'd like to talk to you for a while. Come on down. Can you come down on Tuesday, maybe 1 o'clock? Okay, Thursday at 10, that's good for us. We can do that. And so he comes down to the courthouse. He walks into the courthouse, and he walks up or down the stairs, and he goes to the grand jury room, and he walks in the door, and we're sitting there, and he knows we have authority. And we let him know this is the way it is. You know, we got a lot of problems, and we're here to fix those problems, we the people. We are the common law grand jury, and we expect for you to hold up the Constitution. All of these statutes are irrelevant to us. So when this governor, our governor here in New York, tells you that he's going to remove you from office if you don't obey the law when he commands you to do something, like take our guns, and you deny him and say, nah, no way, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to obey the Constitution because I took an oath. When he goes to try to apply that against you, he's got to come to us. And we will never indict you for holding up the Constitution. We will indict you if you disobey the Constitution and obey an unconstitutional law, then we're coming out after you. And as long as you do the right thing, and here's a book that explains how it works, and we give them the book, and it does explain how it works, and here's a whole bunch of them. How many deputies you got? Yeah, okay, and you know, got a police, yeah, take a couple of hundred. Just get them out to your offices. Make sure they understand the law. Why don't we meet next week? Give us a call. We can meet down at the diner. We can have some coffee, and we'll get a nice table. We'll sit down for an hour, and we'll buy you a coffee. And you come back with all the questions you have concerning this booklet. And we could do that once a week until you feel comfortable. And any time you have a question, here's our phone number. And we'll answer it for you. You can still go talk to the county attorney if that's what you want to do. But we strongly suggest after you finish with him, you give us a call. Because I'm sure our answers are going to be quite different than his. And if you obey his, you might end up in jail. So you should call us. Because we have the power to indict. We have the power to bring it before the 25, and they have the power to indict. And that's how you take control. The sheriff is going to be happy to see us.
The book you mentioned before, is that the best book available to teach common law?
Oh, this and is the best. This is the best book that will give you a well-founded understanding of common law by reading this booklet. And it is, you know, about 42 pages or something like that. You know, right now it could be printed out off of our website. If you've got a printer that prints double sides, you can set it up for double side and then you fold it in half and it makes a nice book, like half the page of an 8x11, 8.5x11. We are in the process of trying to covenant a deal with some publisher to actually get pocket handbooks, and then we'll be selling them online. But we don't want people not to be without it, so it's downloadable. I just today updated the booklet, so if you go up there, you'll get the old version. We added about 6 or 8 more pages, yeah, at least maybe 10 pages we added to it, so we have about 40-some-odd pages. And I will be uploading that probably tonight or tomorrow morning. So you might want, if you do it tonight, you might want to come back in a couple of days and get the later version. You can come to we have a meeting every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Or we go to webinar, so people can come in on the phone or through their browser. And if you have questions about this or anything that we do, you can come to our meeting. We usually start off with 20 minutes, a half hour of updating what's going on, the news, what we've done, where we're at, where we're going, that kind of stuff. And then we take questions and answers on any subject concerning what we're doing in the judicial process. And we encourage people to get together and get their own systems going. You can go up. We have 4 lectures on common law. They're about 8 hours apiece, roughly speaking. One of them's a little shorter than that, but 35-40 hours of common law on audio. It's on MP3. Great teacher, a guy named Bill Thornton, wrote the book, literally speaking, on a court of record. And we also have videos that give some ideas on how to handle the court, how to deal in the court. We wrote a book on court access, which is available for free. You get into the common law part, side of the thing, and you click on court access on one of the tabs, and you can download it through a zip file. And we give you the anatomy of a court case. We lay out the paperwork and how it works and how it sets up and how to write papers. We had a lot of court cases up there, but since we moved our site from state to national, I never got all that stuff back up. And we're redoing our site right now to a very sophisticated site, which is automated, and there's going to be a lot of people that will be helping out on this website. One person from every state as a coordinator will have control on this site for their state and work with the other states together. We'll have a national meeting room, and we'll always have our Monday night meetings for educational purposes. And our entire website was done for education. That's what we're about. We're not about meeting or anywhere. We're about educating people, giving them the framework, all the tools they need. We'll hold their hand as long as they need their hand being held to walk through the systems until they're ready and they feel I can do this on my own, because freedom is popular and freedom is just common sense. And it all boils down to 25 people in a room making a decision on what we need to do with this problem before us, and everybody outside that room is irrelevant to them at that moment. And if it goes into the It's all about slow people at the end of the trial, sitting in a room, figuring out what we're going to do, what is the right thing to do, what's honorable, what's just, and what is merciful, and how are we going to reinstate this injured party if this person is guilty. And that is just the more complex than that. It's just a people thing. People figuring things out on their own in a room and getting the job done.
John, what's the title of that book, please? And can you give us the website details?
Yeah, it's nationallibertyalliance.org, okay? And when you get out there, you can click on Dearest Documents and Services. And when you get onto that page, you'll look for a link that says, it's a handbook, it says Common Law Handbook, the Sheriff's, Justice and Justices. So it's a common law handbook. And you'll find it on that page, and you'll probably find it in a few other places on the site. And like I said, I'll update you for later tomorrow, but if you want to get it now, and you get the update in a couple of days, that's good too. But you are not taking anything out of the one that's up there. You're just adding stuff to it.
Right, okay. So the person who asked the question, the lead to the UN, etc., John just mentioned this last night. Are you aware, John, of other countries in common law, or is it just the US?
Am I aware of what?
That other countries in Europe, Africa, Asia, or South America are attempting common law as well.
Right, and, you know, unless America, in this case, sound prudent or stuck up to the situation, well, unfortunately, it's true. If America fails, the rest of the world's going to fail. And because, you see, America's been busy for the last 50 years setting up democracies. And democracies is just a front for an allegory. All of those countries are under dictatorship. America is no different. We have a dictator in the White House. He's hiding himself under the veil of, he calls himself a democracy. And the government keeps sticking down on some democracies. America is not a democracy. We are a republic. And a republic is a country of laws and constitution. And that's what we are. We're not ruled by men. We're ruled by principles, principles that come from God. And so if America has too much force, the rest of it will be able to pull back very quickly and easily. You know, if you're going for the New World Order, you know, how countries are going to survive. This is not only an American fight. This is an international fight. This is a worldwide fight. And I do know that people around the world know, because I occasionally get emails from people in other countries, and they're thankful for what we're doing. And we're thankful for them paying attention and trying to do what they're trying to do wherever they're at. And together, we the people can save the world, ultimately. Because if America is successful, the rest of the world is going to flourish with it. Because justice will be served around this world after we take back the republic, the people. The people can take the republic.
Yes, I agree with that, John. And thanks very much. I've enjoyed this. I hope all the listeners have enjoyed it.
Thank you for having us.
I hope you'll welcome back any time.